This podcast is a Majestic Giraffe production. For more information and more content, visit majesticgiraffe.com.
But I was going into Toshi Station to pick up some power converters.
Droids are clean, the vaporizers are patched, and the speeder's fueled. It's time to pick up some blue milk and power converters. You're listening to Toshi Station Radio, brought to you by the Majestic Giraffe Network. Now here are your hosts for the Snarkiest Podcast in Star Wars and Geek Culture, Brian and Nancy.
From the outskirts of Anchorhead and on the shores of the Great Chott Flats, you're listening to Toshi Station Radio, the bright center in the universe for all things Star Wars and geek culture. I'm your host, Brian, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Nancy.
Hi!
On today's episode, we're chatting with Mike Cooper from the new fan site, 1138. We're about to get started, so sit back, grab some power converters, and enjoy the show. Hey, that's not a big enough of a stumble for me to go back and re-record it. Welcome, Mike.
Hello.
So why don't you tell us a bit about yourself before we start the show? Such an open-ended question.
Well, I guess from a non-Star Wars standpoint, I am a videographer and a facilities manager working in Pittsburgh. I work at a law firm as well as for a nonprofit multimedia group called The Pillow Project. We do sort of mostly dance-based shows, but I do video that incorporates the dance. It's very hard to explain, but if anybody wants to look into it, they can go to thespaceupstairs.org. You can see a show info about our events and videos of some of the stuff I do. And on top of that, I have been posting at theforce.net, specifically in the literature section, for just over 14 years now. My 14-year anniversary was a couple weeks ago, and that's the thing that is responsible for most of my being well-known to the extent I am.
And this is further proof on our running gag on this podcast that everyone has a more interesting job than I do. All right, and before we move on, a quick word from our sponsors. Toshi Station Radio is brought to you in part by Audible.com. Listeners to this podcast can get a free audiobook by signing up for a free trial. Click the link at Toshi-Station.net for more details.
And we're also brought to you in part by Her Universe. Flaunt your world with Star Wars, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, Doctor Who, and other fandom-inspired wardrobe and jewelry. Click the link on our blog to purchase awesome geek gear and keep the lights running on the podcast.
And stay tuned, because a little later, there's some new Her Universe releases we're going to talk about real quick.
Yes.
Awesome. So, hey, Nancy, what's new on the blog?
We really only talked about Pacific Rim this week. Bria wrote a spoiler-filled review of the movie, so if you'd like to read her thoughts, go read that. And both you and Bria did your go-no-go feature in a non-spoiler fashion, and you both gave it a go.
Yes. Listen, this isn't Schindler's List. Let's get that out of the way.
It's a horrible comparison.
It's a horrible comparison, but it was the only high quality film I could think of off the top of my head. But Pacific Rim is this great homage to B movies, and it was delightfully fun, and it's the most enjoyable film I've seen this year. So go see it; you'll enjoy it.
Okay.
And with that, we go into Fixer's Flash, the geeky things we've done in the past week or so. And as is tradition on this show, we start with Nancy.
I'm still writing a book. I probably will be saying that for the next 3 or 4 months. Yay. If you have a Cinemark theater near you, you should check out their website, because they do a classic movie series. And the movie this past week was Back to the Future, so I went to go see it on Sunday. And it's, you know, obviously Back to the Future. It's really good. And but wow, some things made me way more uncomfortable now than when I was a kid.
Yeah, there are some scenes in there that are just really, really uncomfortable.
Yeah, like the fact that Biff is basically trying to rape Marty's mom, and then he's waxing their car at the end of the movie. So in my head canon, he went to jail sometime in between there.
That's the only way I can reconcile that. So yeah, it's still a good movie though. I'll sit down and watch it anytime it's on.
It was great. And
I think Dewey Griffin's going to jail no matter what.
Yeah, that's true. And and the whole Libyan terrorists. I was like, ah.
There is no way you can get away with Libyan terrorists.
No. So yeah, Back to the Future was fun, and in a few weeks, I'm going to drag Brian to go see Ghostbusters. Yay!
Can I just say that Ghostbusters is one of my favorite films ever, and is one of the first films I could quote top to bottom. I'm excited to go see it.
So it's not really dragging you, it's you dragging me.
Yeah, it's pretty much it.
Okay. So yes, and we also watched some more Stargate. Yay. But we only watched 2 episodes, but we met the Tok'ra. So, yeah, we're getting on with the lore and stuff.
Yes, I'm really enjoying this show. It's the campy science fiction I needed in my life.
Yeah, and Jack O'Neill is awesome. Everyone is awesome.
That he is. As for me, I started reading an advanced copy of Empire and Rebellion, Razor's Edge by Martha Wells, the hyped Leia novel that was announced at Celebration last year. I'm only a couple chapters in, but I'm really enjoying it thus far. It's just nice that we're finally getting a Leia novel.
Finally.
So yeah, I'm enjoying that. Unfortunately, that's been pretty much all I've been up to because I've been busy, getting ready to move across the country.
Oh, you are?
I am, yes.
Did you tell me about that?
Did I forget to mention that? I'm going to need to crash at your place for a little while.
I should clean.
Well, I guess as far as outside of fandomy thing, I'm going to see Paul McCartney Friday. So if you're a music nerd, then we'll say that's a geeky thing I'm up to.
That's cool.
Yes, I'm quite excited for that. But that's been it for me. But as is also tradition on this segment, we drag our guests into it. So, Mike, you get to tell us the geeky things you've been up to.
Okay, well, not exactly a geeky thing, but like I said, I'm in that group, the Pillow Project. We had a show last weekend called Second Saturday, which is every month, which is the reason that I haven't seen Pacific Rim yet, but I'm hoping to rectify that this week. And meanwhile, my big project right now, if you are aware of me on TFN, you might notice that I've been rereading the Marvel comics, or I shouldn't say rereading, I've been reading them. I never actually read them to begin with. And I started it about 4 years ago, actually. I was in the hospital for a while, and I had a lot of free time. I wasn't working. So I got through about the first 40 issues or so, and I would make notations down as I was going and then post the notations. And people, we would have a little back and forth about what continuity issues were coming up and how different things have been handled over the years. And I got to about 40 issues in. I got midway through Empire Strikes Back, and then I got a job, and I got out of the habit of it. And I didn't do anything for 4 years, and now I'm just starting to get back into it again. And I'm currently, I believe, on issue 61. I'm just around when they're starting to get to know Shira Bree. So it's Lumaya finally, so I'm excited now. It was boring for a while.
If I ever read the Marvel comics, those are probably the only ones I would read.
It's a pretty long slog up to that. Yeah. It's a lot more continuous now. It's not as much one and two issue stories, and it's actually, she's been around for like 4 or 5 issues now, but she hasn't really done anything yet. She's just sort of been in the background, and they're just now starting to get to the point of explaining where she comes from, or at least where she's saying she comes from.
You know, I'm thinking we made a mistake not having Bria on here and just letting Bria and Mike talk about their big expanded universe related rereads.
I'm in awe of that, by the way. I can't. It takes me a month to read a novel.
Yeah, Bria was
why
really.
I haven't finished Kenobi yet. I just can't imagine doing that.
Bria was the only person on our staff who could even consider pulling something off like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Some people have X-ray vision or the ability to fly as a superpower. Bria has superhuman reading.
Speaking of nerd things, there is one other thing I might as well mention. I'm working on getting a short film together. Like I said, I'm a videographer in my spare time. I went to school for visual effects, and I have a short film, a sort of a science fiction idea that kind of straddles my two worlds because it's very sci-fi heavy and it's very Star Wars inspired, but at the same time it's starring one of the girls that is a dancer in my organization, and so it's kind of bringing the two areas of my interest into one reality. But I hope to be doing probably a Kickstarter or something for that sometime in the next 6 months or so. If you follow me on TFN, you'll hear about it, I'm sure.
Oh, fantastic. Let us know when that goes live.
Definitely.
Oh, we have echo. Mics.
It shouldn't be me.
Oh, who says it?
It's not me. My speakers are off. Welcome to live podcasting, everyone.
Is it mine?
Might have been yours.
I don't know how. I don't have the window open.
Well, it's gone okay. Now. It's gone now. We're all good. We're all fine here. How are you?
We're all fine. How are you?
Yes, we're just going to be dumping movie quotes today on the podcast, and let's just move on before we get off the rails any further. Deke Sturt, news from around fandom, and we've got a bit of fashion news to kick things off today.
Yay! New Her Universe merchandise! Woohoo! And Mara the dog came over for this. You knew I was going to talk about you, huh? If you're new to the podcast, I have a dog named Mara. And that's appropriate because one of these shirts from Her Universe is a Mara shirt. It's the cover from Choices of One, the paperback. So yay armor, not catsuit. And there's also an Ahsoka shirt and a Jaina Solo shirt. And I am probably going to buy the Jaina Solo shirt because it's based on the promotional artwork for Sword of the Jedi. And just in case they end up canceling Sword of the Jedi, I want to have the shirt.
Good call.
And let's see, the Star Wars Books Twitter account just tweeted a picture of Ashley with the Jaina and Mara shirts. Actually got it pulled up here on the live stream for those of you watching live. And yeah, they're both pretty neat looking shirts. I definitely like the Jaina one more, but it is nice seeing a Mara shirt that doesn't feature the cat suit.
Yes. So, oh, and she's wearing the Rogue Squadron hoodie.
Those have been really popular. I've heard people have had trouble getting them from Think Geek because they can't keep them in stock.
Really? It's not surprising.
No, those were some of the first things to sell out at Star Wars weekends.
Yeah. And, if you're not going to San Diego Comic-Con, and if you're listening to this podcast, you probably aren't. The merchandise will be available online starting July 18th. So go ahead and buy it.
Meanwhile, fans at Celebration Europe are going to be getting a first look at Star Wars Rebels.
I'm really mad about this, by the way.
Yeah, I wish I had all the money and all the vacation to head to Germany in a week.
Jealous.
So jealous. And like we said on the last episode, though, if you're not one of the fortunate people going overseas to attend Celebration Europe 2, be sure to give Jedi News UK a follow on Twitter.
Yes. And I probably have Mark on after Celebration Europe to talk all about it.
Oh, yes. We probably should have announced that. We are going to have Mark Newbold back on after Celebration Europe just so we can chat and get a recap of that event and get Mark's trademark humor back on the show.
Make us jealous.
Yes. Very jealous. Angry Birds Star Wars. You might have an iOS device or a smartphone of some sort and you got the game. Well, it's getting a prequel sequel thing. It's getting another game.
Remember when we were really excited about Angry Birds Star Wars and that was the only big thing coming up?
Oh, come. When that was announced, that was all we had to look forward to.
Remember those times?
Before the dark times, before the episode 7 rumor mills.
Before Disney.
Before Disney. So it's got a prequel, sequel, second game thingamawhatsit, and there is a gameplay preview video that we've got hosted over on the blog. Click the link in the show notes, you can find it there.
I never finished the first one. I'm really bad at it.
Me neither.
Yeah, I tried to play it. I just played it on the plane, and I'd do okay, and then I would just get to a point where I couldn't win, and I'd get mad and turn it off. Which is pretty much how I am with all video games.
You think there'll be a point in the prequel where one of the birds actually turns to the dark side and becomes a pig? I'm not sure how they can incorporate that into the story.
That would be cool.
You're my brother, Red Bird.
Aw.
Now we're looking forward to the Stover novelization of Angry Birds Star Wars.
God.
It'll be heartbreaking. Kotobuyika, the makers of the Jaina statue, is coming out with a Mara Jade figure, and they released some concept art on it. Pulling it up on the blog, so we'll just get this out of the way. It's the cat suit.
Yeah.
Cat suit. And
I look so excited. It's the blue cat suit, though, not the black one.
Yes, but it is less cheesecakey than normal.
Oh, her boobs are way too big. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's not as bad as that what's-his-name's piece of art that gets used everywhere.
Yeah.
And she's wearing heels. And
yeah.
Nothing about this screams practical.
I can't even walk in heels. Let's kick people's ass in them.
I felt like the only person who didn't like the Jaina Solo one.
It was okay, but it was...
Oh, my sweatsuit is too hot. I have to take it off.
You know, and they came so close to getting it right. If they'd left her in the fully dressed pilot's uniform, it would have been awesome. Just left her in the jumpsuit, it would have been a great figure.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
One day, we will get official artwork or some sort of licensed product of Mara Jade in Jedi robes. With a blue lightsaber.
And if you want that, you may want to consider buying that Her Universe shirt.
Yeah.
Just, if that sells, then we can see more Mara licensed.
Listen, Hasbro. I want to use a Mara Jade action figure as my wedding cake topper. But I do not want to have her in a cat suit. So you have 11 months.
Make this right.
Come through. If not, I will take my Mara Jade action figure and put Obi-Wan's cloak on her. I already have this planned out.
Seriously, though, would it be too much to ask that at some point a female Jedi has artwork done of her where she's actually in Jedi robes?
Oh, I was just told that I can pull the head off and put it on a different body. Sweet! I'm going to pull her head off and put it on Padme's wedding dress body.
Not Obi-Wan's body?
Well, that would be a different kind of wedding.
Yeah, oh dear. Moving on. In the Episode 7 corner, our weekly Episode 7 corner, it looks like the scripts are finished. Maybe. Possibly. Last night, Bad Robot. Robot Chicken was doing something else that's on the shelf right now. Bad Robot tweeted a picture of scripts, by the look of it. Red pages with a black cover with a Bad Robot logo on the front. They said, hot off the presses, can you guess what's behind the cover? My thoughts is it's either Episode 7 or it's the long-awaited Howard the Duck 2 Electric Boogaloo. Said no one ever.
Have there been theories made about that the script pages are red and maybe that, you know, signifies the Sith or something coming back?
You know, I don't think we've done a good enough job overanalyzing the fact that the pages are red. I'm disappointed in you, fandom. You're better than this.
Well, our mutual friend Paul Urquhart has been observing that they look like Star Destroyers.
Ah.
Huh.
I just thought that maybe we can see Star Destroyers again in Episode 7. I keep having these thoughts of all the things I might get to see in Episode 7, and it makes me really happy.
What are we going to do when the first set photos show up?
Analyze them to death.
Yeah, good point.
I remember very vividly one of the Attack of the Clones select pictures, and it was Padme sitting on this sort of pillar looking sad. And everyone was like, what is she doing? What is going on? Blah, 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 blah. And then it just happened to be her, like, 2-second shot in the arena.
I remember the first one was Anakin running through the crowd on the underlevels. I still remember that day.
The crazy hasn't even started yet, folks. We're in for so many more years of this.
Yep.
Brace yourself. The production photos are coming. All right, and with that, we're going to slide into Cammy's Concerns, our discussion topic for the week. And as you've heard, we've got Mike Cooper with us. Mike Cooper of TFN fame, and who has a new website. Care to tell us about that, Mike?
Well, it's called 1138, and the short version is that I started out pretty much as long as I've been online. I've been doing websites in one form or another. I started out doing a thing called the unofficial New Jedi Order homepage in 1999, right around the time Vector Prime came out, which was the first time I was pretty much online and active in the community, in the fan community. And I was doing that for a few years, and then I ended up being hired by TheForce.net to do their books and comics section for a while. And that lasted until about 2007, and then I got sick of it, and I just wasn't able to keep up with the output for like a news site anymore. And ever since then, I've been still at TFN, and I've still been posting the things that I would normally put on a website. Like every once in a while, you know, I'll interview like Tom Taylor or someone I did once. And I'll do little articles and I'll put them on a blog or something. And eventually I just got to the point where I thought I wanted to have a one unified umbrella to put all that stuff under. And that was around the time that episode 7 was announced. And part of it, honestly, was episode 7. And part of it was probably actually more because of the Clone Wars, because the last few years or so of being on the TFN board, there's been a great deal of people just who they can't stop watching the show, but they can't stand the show either. And it's just, they come, they watch it, and they come on, and every week it's a whole new cycle of complaining and complaining again. And on the other hand, you have sites like TFN proper, or even, honestly, the official site, where everything is wonderful, and everybody loves everything that's coming out, and it's all exciting, and it's all great, and there's no false moves whatsoever. And I just felt like I never saw anybody that was right down the middle that actually was about, it was, like I say on the website, not sycophantic, but not miserable either. Like, rational and being able to appreciate the good things about Star Wars without seeing all of it as the Holy Grail, and being able to speak honestly about the things that maybe are not great and what we hope to see from the future. And looking toward episode 7, I wanted there to be something that was setting a tone for the sequel trilogy that was A, not belittling the Expanded Universe fans who are probably going to lose everything in the next couple of years, if we're honest, but at the same time, was welcoming to people who weren't interested in the Expanded Universe. I don't want the average EU fan to be looked at in 3 years as just having been a waste of time. Like, I want those people to be a part of the conversation moving into the sequel trilogy, even if the continuity that we know goes away, because we still have a greater understanding of what could be happening in the sequel era than anybody else, and so we should be part of the conversation. And I wanted to be able to set the tone of that conversation in a way that's not, even if you're not a fan of the EU, you're at least EU conversant, and you can hear about, we can bring up things like Thrawn and the Yuuzhan Vong without having to be totally religious about it, and being able to say, well, this is a good thing about what they did. Here's a way maybe it could be better. Here's something that could be improved upon, etc.
Oh, that's interesting how you put it. I think that's the same reason Nancy and I got into the podcast and blog. We were looking for more of a middle.
You were looking for more.
I was looking for more. Hey, you're the one who told me to start the blog.
But you wanted to start the podcast.
Okay, fine. But essentially, we were looking for more middle ground, something that wasn't, I hate to pick on TFN more, but Doom
TFN.
Or TFN's... TFN.
I wrote TFN, I'll say it.
yeah, something that wasn't quite as doom and gloom, and something that wasn't essentially a PR tool like the official site. So that was at least our story of how we came to be too.
Yeah. There was an E! Online article right after the movie, right after the announcement about Disney came out, that I'm just going to have to paraphrase it, but it was something, the log line of the article was something along the lines of, people who read the Star Wars Expanded Universe novels think they know what episode 7's about. Well, I'm here to tell you they're wrong, as if we were all, our first reaction was to say, oh boy, they're going to adapt the Thrawn trilogy, I can't wait. Which nobody could possibly have realistically thought, and I didn't want, that was what my fear was that people were going to, they were going to look at us as the delusional fans who thought we knew what was going to happen. But we know better than anybody what it's like to have your stuff contradicted.
Yeah, I mean, that bothered me. I saw that from a lot of different outlets, even outlets within our own fandom. So that wasn't too neat, which, again, prompted probably at least a half dozen columns on our site.
So, to go back in time, we ask all of our guests, how did you become a Star Wars fan? So we'll ask you, How'd you get to love the saga?
Well, I have an interesting story about this that surprises a lot of people. I didn't see a single Star Wars movie until the special editions.
Oh, nice.
I grew up with them. It's funny that you were talking about Back to the Future before, because I grew up with Back to the Future the way most people did with Star Wars. Like, those are the movies that I can quote back to front. But the special editions were coming out, and I was like, oh, this Star Wars thing seems interesting. I was 14 at the time, and so I went to see the movies. And the best thing about this, I can say, whatever else you want to say about the special editions, nobody else my age can say this. The first time I saw all three movies was in the theater. And I remember them. I was old enough to actually remember them and appreciate them in a way that you couldn't when you were like maybe 4 or 5, which a lot of people I know saw Return of the Jedi when they were like a toddler, but they don't really remember it that way. So that was the start of it. It was nice. Because of that, now I go back and I see the originals and I have a different perspective about things like Han shooting first and the Ewok song, which is the devil and should have gone away.
Nub nub.
But even like there were a lot of things that I didn't even realize were special edition for a while. Like for the longest time I didn't realize that Luke's scream when he's falling into the pit after the duel with Darth Vader had been added in. I didn't realize that was not an original thing until years later. But so anyway, that was it for a few months. And then the following summer was my 15th birthday. And I had been looking into Star Wars, but I wasn't really online a lot. So I didn't have a lot of venues to look into it. But I had heard about Shadows of the Empire. And I asked my mother to get me Shadows of the Empire for my birthday. And being a 50-year-old woman, she got me a different book. She got me actually The Paradise Snare, the first of the Han Solo trilogy. Which is
close, but not quite.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if she couldn't find it or she just saw Star Wars on the cover and that was that. But she got me that. And I loved it, and I thought it was great. I immediately went and got The Hutt Gambit was the next one. I read them back to back. And then after doing that, I realized that the third one, Rebel Dawn, didn't come out for 6 more months.
Oh, no.
I had 6 months. After reading the first two in like a couple of weeks, I had to wait 6 months for the third one.
So and thus began the waiting.
Yeah, so I had, well, at that point, I didn't have a lot of waiting to do because there were about 50 other books ahead in the timeline. And I realized it was dawning on me that these were pretty much the earliest books at the time in the timeline. This is before the prequels. So I went from there and I just figured I started with, I don't know, maybe I guess it must have been Splinter of the Mind's Eye would have been the next one, or maybe the New Hope novelization. But I was able to go more or less chronologically for most of the Bantam era. And I would just jump back every once in a while when something like Rebel Dawn came out or the X-Wing books. I read most of them chronologically. But like when I remember Starfighters of Ajumara, I was already past that in the timeline. So I had to go back for that. But I caught up right around the time the New Jedi Order started, so that's part of the reason that I decided that was going to be my first thing to make a website about, because I felt like I was finally on the same page as everybody else.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, and that leads into the next question was your introduction to fandom and how you got involved and what made you want to start a website?
Well, actually, my very, very first introduction to fandom was in 97, around the same time that I got into the movies, but I didn't really know about the books yet. The first online community that I was a part of was actually a thing called the Rebel Squadrons, which I think still exists, but I'm not really sure how active they are anymore. But it was basically a big group of gaming people that they would meet up online and play online matches of X-Wing versus TIE Fighter and X-Wing Alliance and stuff like that. And they actually, there was an active community of game editing going on there where you could actually design missions from scratch. And so we would be in like sort of fake role-playing squadrons where they would, one person would make a tour of missions for X-Wing or TIE Fighter or one of those games and release them. And we would all play them and post our stats. And it was just one of those kind of gaming things. And that was the first thing I did that. I did that for a couple years. I was a big fan of the X-Wing series when I was a teenager. And then, like I said, I got the NJO started coming out and I just decided. I think the one thing that's interesting about the New Jedi Order homepage that carries through to now is that even at that age, I would have been 16, 17 at that time. Even then, I knew that I didn't want to just try to do what TFN was doing. I didn't want to try to compete. What the hell was that?
That was my dog.
I didn't want to try to compete with anything else that was already going on. I wanted to do something that was unique. I wanted to try to find a gap in the existing like fan community. And I figured the NJO was a new thing. It was a coherent thing. There was certain things that were going to be relevant to it, but I didn't have to worry about anything that was going on with the prequels at the time, because this was right around when Phantom Menace came out. I didn't have to worry about any of that. I could just pick my little niche and work on that niche and be as good at that as I could. And it worked out pretty well, and I think the site itself was very successful considering the time period and considering how old I was. And I got the job from TFN out of it, and I think I had already been at the TFN lit boards at that point, but in becoming a full-time staff member of the website itself, I just sort of became more immersed in that community, and I never really left. Even after I stopped working for the site, I never really left the forums entirely. And just from talking to people there, things come up again occasionally. Like I said, I got very interested in Invasion, obviously, when that comic series was announced, because it was the first time that they were revisiting the Long War. And so I talked to Tom Taylor a lot. I developed a relationship with him. He actually named a bar in Narshada bar after me in the background of the fifth issue, because we had been talking for a while, and I'm proud of that. But things like that, like I've always been around, but I've never really, or at least since 2007, I had never really done anything in an official capacity. I was just sort of tooling around in my own time with whatever was interesting to me. And that's part of why actually 1138 now, as much as it's about my wanting to advocate my own point of view, I'm only one of five staff writers at the moment, in addition to a number of guest contributors, because I knew that I wasn't going to be able to output at a level that was really going to sustain an entire site just by itself. I do maybe one or two articles a week, or one or two articles a month for the most part, and maybe a third if I'm lucky, but I wanted to find other people who I knew had a viewpoint that maybe not be exactly like mine, but at least they approach it from the same way. They're serious about it. They're realistic. They're eloquent. They know what they're talking about. They can make real world comparisons to things. We just had an article today by my good friend Jay Shah, which is about the politics of the EU, and he goes into detail on the different political allusions that have been made to the real world and when they do bear out and when they don't bear out and things like that. I want it to be a site for people who are educated beyond the franchise itself and can see the franchise in the light of overall culture, which I think a lot of people don't necessarily do. And I think maybe that's one reason that my having not seen the movies when I was a kid maybe helped me see Star Wars in a different way. I'm less in awe of it. I'm able to sort of approach it more rationally. And I wanted the site to be all about rational. That's why that's the first word you see on top of the thing is rational.
Oh, sure enough, it is. Sorry, I just pulled up your site. It is actually rational. So speaking of TFN Lit, people are maybe familiar with you for starting the original diversity thread there. I mean, and it's no surprise, that's a topic that's near and dear to our hearts. So first off, what was your goal with that thread?
Well, it started out years and years ago, around probably I first started bringing it up when Legacy of the Force was starting out. I started to notice every new book would come out and the dramatis personae would just be so-and-so white human male, so-and-so white human male, so-and-so white human female. Obviously it wouldn't say white, but that's what I knew, and it became more and more obvious as it went on. And I would bring it up in the different topics pertaining to those books, and it would maybe get a little bit of a response, but people generally didn't really seem to care because it wasn't being thrown in your face like that. It was just something that had come about from the accumulation of all these old Bantam characters for the most part. Like Corrin was around, so he was a white human male, and Kip Duran was around, and et cetera. And no one ever sat down and said, okay, the Jedi Council is going to be 10 white people. Like it wasn't a conscious decision someone made. It was just something that had happened when no one was looking. And it didn't seem to me that anybody had noticed. So I started putting it out. And one day, I want to say it was when Abyss came out, the second book in Fate of the Jedi, but it might have been before that, I'm honestly not sure. But there was one that I saw, the Duranis Personae, sure enough, it was 10 out of 12 white men. And I posted it on the VIP forum that used to be on when StarWars.com had official forums. There was a VIP thread where you could ask people questions. And I posted the entire Duranis Personae on the thread with the addition of white under every character where it was relevant. And no one official responded except Troy Denning. And I really, really wish I had his exact words, because I don't want to mischaracterize him. God knows he's got enough grief right now from us.
Sorry, Troy.
He responded, and it was something to the effect of, I can't believe you would say that. I don't put the race in the Durant's persona as if the issue was not the characters. The issue was, how dare I suggest that they mention the race? Like, that's the problem. And that was the day that I finally broke down and actually started the first diversity thread, which at the time I called Beating a Dead EOP, which should suggest my mind state at the time as far as people taking me seriously. It didn't seem like anybody cared. And actually, if you go to the thread now, you can see a link to the original site. And sure enough, the first couple pages of the original thread are people basically rolling their eyes and saying, oh, get over it. Nothing's going to change. It's not worth it. And in comparison to that, I feel like it's done pretty well. Like it's been going on steadily since then. The current thread now is almost a year old, and it's got over 100 pages of response to it. One of our main contributor is a girl named Marissa, who posts under Jedi Smurf, who actually is one of the founders of a group called Race Bending, which formed after the Avatar movie came out and turned all those characters into white people. Oh, and she's someone I've known, actually. She was a commenter on my new Jedi Orum page forever ago, so I've known her for a while, and I'm really happy to have her support in the diversity thread because she knows what she's talking about more than anybody. And it's good to have the endorsement of someone who's doing something like that more or less for a career. It makes it feel like I'm not just spitting into the wind, that actually I'm saying things that people don't always feel like is getting said, especially not from people who I, you know, spoiler alert, I am in fact a white human male myself. And I feel like most of the time when you hear these kind of complaints, it's from a woman, a female fan, or from a fan of color. And so it can come across, I think, especially at cons, is just, oh, this person is an extra grind because they want to see themselves. And that's a valid thing to want. But at the same time, maybe if I'm the one making the complaint, maybe people might listen to it a second longer. I don't know.
Well, no, I'm with you there. I think that people won't realize that there needs to be more diversity in our media until we start hearing that coming from all sorts of different people, not just the people who are underrepresented, but the people who are traditionally represented within media.
It bothers me from a purely suspension of disbelief point of view. Like, even if I didn't care about the politics of it, I think at a certain point, when the galaxy as we understand it is represented in a Jedi Council by 10 humans, it just is ridiculous. It doesn't make sense anymore. Even if I honestly didn't care about it at all, I would still think, where are all the other people? Like, if 6 out of 12, actually, we did the math. One of the big things in the diversity thread has been to actually do diversity scores, so to speak, of all the books that come out and use the dramatis personae and figure out what percentage of this cast is white, human, straight men. And overall, the general average is about 60% is non-WHIMs, is what I call them, WHMs. Non-WHIM characters, and the other 40% are white human men. So that means, if you bear that out, that means that you could say, based on the population of the EU, that the entire galaxy is 40% white human men, which means that another 40% must be white human women, which means that the whole galaxy is 20% aliens, which is ridiculous. So yeah. That should bother you, if nothing else.
Oh, agreed. So do you think the expanded universe has gotten better or worse in regards to diversity in recent years, or as you've been running this diversity thread through the years?
Well, I do feel like it's gotten better academically. I don't think it's quite as noticeable. I think it kind of has to happen generationally, not only in terms of fans, but in terms of generations of authors that come and go. I think the current generation of authors is worlds above what they were in the 90s. And I think that's a big part of the problem that we have now dates back to the Bantam era, because of characters like Corin and Kip, who would just sort of stick around. They would be the main character of their own series, which may or may not have had decent, diverse casts in and of themselves. But then the main character is the one that sticks around. So by the time you get to the Legacy era, it's just all of these old Bantam characters. And that said, I do think the things that, like I said, the current crop of authors is a lot better. John Ostrander and Jan D'Arcy-Meyer obviously are amazing. Everything they do is perfect. Number one, John Jackson Miller is excellent. He's a little human friendly for my taste, to be honest, but he's very good at including a lot of secondary and tertiary characters who are random races that you never see. And I love that about him, and I will never fault him for doing that. And even Troy Denning, honestly, God love him. The one thing I will give him, like, he does have his alien characters that are near to his heart. He'll keep bringing those scribs back as many times as they let him. And he gave us Saba has taken off because she was put forward one time as being a positive female character, which is annoying, but she is a decent character in and of herself. Like, whatever else you can say about the context that gave birth to Saba, she is a good character, I think. And her, and like I said, the squibs and things like that. I think Troy Denning generally, he's got a dated idea of how to handle aliens. They tend to be stereotypes more than characters, the way that, like, Michael Reeves would do in Coruscant Nights. But at least he's making these characters, I think. I can't fault him too much for that. But I think in 10 years, assuming that the expanded universe is still continuing in 10 years as we know it, I think things will have gotten a lot better than they were in the 90s.
Yeah, I have seen improvements in the last few years. I mean, if you go look at a book like Mercy Kill, I thought that one did pretty well at shaking up and getting at least the cast of characters to be a bigger pot of possibilities there.
And the fact that he chose Piggy to be the main character of that.
That was incredible.
The base he could have used.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had him on the podcast before Mercy Kill came out, and he said something about the main point of view character, and we asked him who it was, and he said, I want you to read the book and find out. And when I actually got to it, I'm like, oh, that's why he wanted us to wait to read it. But it bothers. I think it was actually the diversity thread that made me really start thinking about diversity in Star Wars, funnily enough.
That's a huge compliment. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and I kind of had the same reaction, too, because, I mean, I've always thought of diversity in terms of, like, women, because, you know, I'm a woman. Spoilers. But so, you know, I would, you know, see the female characters and be like, yeah, Mara, Mirax, woo, and, you know, want more female characters. And, you know, that I noticed the aliens were around and everything, but I didn't really think about color, mostly because it's hard to tell in a book. If
that's true. There are a lot of unknowns I've found from math.
Yeah, but then as I was reading it, I was like, you know, this makes a lot of sense. And it was, you know, you've posted that picture of Mara's funeral, which is like,
yep,
right there. You look at the Jedi Council and the prequels, and you look at the Jedi Council at Mara's funeral, and it's like, one of these things is not like the other. And, you know,
Can you imagine what people would say about George Lucas if he had done that in the prequels?
Yeah, and, like, you know, say whatever you want about the prequels, and, like, yes, I wasn't the biggest fan of Padme, and, you know, there could have been more women with speaking roles, but at least as far as the overall movie was concerned, there was a lot of diversity as far as who was in the scene. There was aliens on the Jedi Council. There was people of color on the Jedi Council. There were women on the Jedi Council. You know, they were all there. So it's just like, okay, yeah, you've got it. Now move it over to this area.
Yeah, it's a little disheartening if you go into this thread, look at the first page, and then see that those two pictures juxtaposed like that.
There's a reason that's at the top of the article.
Yeah, yeah. Well played, sir. Well played.
And for me, it's just...
Go ahead. If I ever get to San Diego, which I won't because I live on the other side of the country and I'm poor, but if I ever get to a Del Rey thread, I'm going to make a poster of that picture and I'm going to hang it. I'm going to stand with it over my head for the entire panel.
Nice.
Oh,
nice.
Fast.
I would put it on t-shirts if I could.
Yeah. So, well, I will point people out to it because I think we might be on a panel at Dragon Con about diversity and stuff. So if we are, we will point it out. Look at these pictures. But yeah, it's frustrating to me because we've been talking about it a lot lately. And, you know, the people who say, well, there are female characters. Look at Leia. And I'm like, I've gotten to the point where I'm like, you know what? When you have to point out all the different characters that I should be happy with, then you know there's an issue because you don't have to do that with the male characters.
And well, Leia has existed since 1977.
So what are some things you'd like to see in the expanded universe moving forward as far as diversity goes?
Honestly, and I've made this point even in the original article that started the diversity thread that runs now, all I want is less whims, less white human males. I don't care. Whatever else you want to do is fine. Because every single character that is a main character of a book, like, say, Loreen, I think that's her name, in Dawn of the Jedi, any character like that, anytime you do that, is one less white human male that would otherwise be in that role. So anything that's not that, I think, is an improvement. Beyond that, in terms of specifically more women or more people of color, I leave that to their discretion, because honestly, they do have a point that it should come naturally and you shouldn't make a character a black woman just to do it. It should spring naturally from what you want your story to be. So all I would ask is that they try to not think about white human men and see what else comes to mind, and I'd be happy.
Yeah, that's a important thing I've learned as an author, and I actually wrote a blog about this the other day, is that I think writers all have their defaults that they go to, and they might not even know it. But if you become aware of it, like I am fully aware that my standard when I make a character is to have them be a straight female. So if I know that, and then I can be like, oh, what about having a male in this role, or a, you know, gay person, you know? Or
so the question shouldn't be, does this person, is there a reason this person can't be a white male human? Mm-hmm. Should be, right. What else could they be?
Right.
Is it necessary?
Yeah, and a lot of times it makes it more interesting, especially if they make them an alien character who thinks differently.
Yes.
Then that really makes it a lot more interesting.
Oh, but then we can't identify with them. Haven't you heard?
Oh, boy. Bria and I had some fun.
People hate I-5 and they hate Oral Krieg. And they hate
HK-47. People can't stand him.
So I mean, unrelatable. Bender. You know who people hate? Bender.
R2-D2. No one likes Yoda.
Bite my shiny metal ass. You know, I love it when someone through the veil that is the internet makes that comment to me, a person of color. Because occasionally I want to slap them and say, so you can't identify with someone that isn't a straight white male, yet I have no problems identifying with characters that aren't age 18 to 49 Asian males.
Well, on bad days,
that really gets under my skin.
Yeah, well, it's like my favorite character is Luke Skywalker. And like, I identify with him way more than Princess Leia.
So, I know more female fans of Han than Leia.
Yeah. So
that's one argument that just doesn't hold any water for me.
Right. So I went through your website because I like it. And I picked out some of the recent columns that I thought were interesting and thought-provoking and thought we could chat about them. One of them was a series, Star Wars and Genre. And we were talking about that recently because we read Kenobi. So do you think like this is sort of the fiction where the EU will go if, you know, the post Return of the Jedi EU is kind of in flux right now because of the sequel trilogy, but yet it seems like we're getting books like Kenobi and then even kind of Darth Maul Lockdown is sort of a genre book. Do you see that more of a future? Do you like genre stories in Star Wars? And is there anything you'd like to see?
If Kenobi is an example of genre, then absolutely, I think. And yeah, even Lockdown is, I think the thing about it is I'm wondering whether they're doing it as a conscious effort to shift into that kind of stories or whether they're doing it because continuity is such an iffy thing right now and they're trying to think, what can we get away with in this climate that won't totally be obliterated in a couple of years that people are interested in? And that's why not only are they doing Kenobi, but it's called Kenobi in giant block letters. They're trying to, you know, make it as obvious to people who don't necessarily know anything about the books as they can. But, by the way, this is the point in the interview where I need to start pimping my friends that are writing these articles. Star Wars and Genre.
Absolutely, go for it.
Star Wars and Genre is by a man who writes under the name Lucas Jackson, though I seriously doubt that's his name. He's known better at TFN as Havoc. He's been around for a long time. He's excellent, and I love him, and he's been really a dynamo at the site so far.
Oh, Havoc is responsible for some of my all-time favorite TFN posts. What was it? Jason's Fabulous Journey?
Around.
Yeah, the Jason's Journey thread is hilarious.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. But anyway, getting back to the actual question, I think the thing about genre stories that, especially what's striking me as I'm reading the Kenobi, is that the best part about it is scale. It's the smallest scale story you could possibly tell. It's not even really about him. It's about like moisture farmers and people who work at stores and dealing with their idiot children and things like that. And I think that's so unbelievably refreshing. And I wish they had done this kind of thing in the EU all along.
Yeah, it's amazing how it feels. It's so small of a scale, but it feels really big.
Because like, he's a good writer and he makes you give a crap about the characters.
Yeah, like I feel
legacy at all. Like we don't care about Fae the Jedi because we don't care about the characters anymore. Nothing else can happen to them. Yeah. Everything has to be bigger and crazier and more ridiculous, and it just becomes numb. But he can take a story about a shopkeeper and turn it into this amazing thing where you can't put it down. And like Lockdown, hopefully, will be that same kind of thing. If it's really like a jailbreak kind of story, like it seems to be, that could be awesome.
Mm-hmm. And another of the articles that I really liked is 5 Things We Need to See in the Sequel Trilogy. So, of course, that begs the question of what would you like to see in the sequel trilogy? Or is it sort of a thing where you're trying not to have expectations? Because I don't want to have expectations. Because those are always broken.
Well, first off, like I said, for promotional reasons, that was written by guy who goes by Nick Adams. Everybody knows him as Admiral Nick. He's an awesome guy.
Hail Akbar.
He is the man responsible for Admiral Akbar having a first name. He's the test reader for warfare, and he's the one he lobbied to keep that in there, and they kept it in. But God bless Nick. And yeah, that article is specifically with regard to what do we want to see as far as the government going forward. What do you think the sequel trilogy can learn from the EU in terms of how they handled the New Republic and what kind of enemies you throw up against the New Republic? And having read it, I think the thing that I mostly want to just do, honestly, as far as the episodes are concerned, I want to get through it. Like, I have no expectations whatsoever. I just want to get through it and get to the spinoffs, because I think the spinoffs are the opportunity to do genre stories on the big screen, which is really exciting. I will gladly forego the EU for the sake of something like Kenobi as a movie.
Mm,
imagine, yes. That would be awesome. As I've been reading it, I've been casting the characters in my head. I can see it as being a movie. And I think I feel like it's expected of them to do sequels, so that's what's happening right now. But I feel like the sooner we just get that out of our system, the more they can jump ahead to just sort of experimenting with different stories. And that's what I really want to see going forward, is I want to see a Western Star Wars story. I want to see something like Seven Samurai. I want to see something like 300. I mentioned something about the Old Republic Jedi doing a story in the style of 300.
Oh, God.
It'd be very cool. I mean, maybe 300 is maybe not the least controversial movie, but you know what I'm saying. Like, something that of that level of visceral war kind of a story, but with Jedi, could be awesome. Like, imagine if they did something like that based on even an approximation of, I forget the name of the... 1,000 years ago, Darth Bane, everybody died. I'm blanking on the name of the battle of whatever.
Rusan?
Rusan, that's it, yes.
Pulled that out of my butt.
Even if it was totally a new continuity and it didn't use the old story, imagine that kind of a thing as a movie.
Yeah.
And the sooner they get Episode 7 out of their system, the more likely that is to happen. And then imagine if they give that to someone who really can do good war stories. Like, that could yet happen with Spielberg. Maybe once Episode 7, 8, and 9 are out of the way, someone like him might be more interested in having a more open canvas. And who knows?
Personally, I'm really looking forward to the inevitable Top Gun spinoff.
Yes. Well, yeah, Rogue Squadron. Rogue Squadron could be anything.
Oh my God.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, the Top Gun spinoff, complete with whatever the Star Wars equivalent of a shirtless beach volleyball scene is.
Can I lobby for that, please?
We all know Wes and Hobby want in on that.
I will say yes, please. and another... what was that?
I can't follow that.
So in the last article I wanted to highlight was a roundtable that you guys did, which I hope you do more of them, because it was really interesting. Zia, about the next generation of the antagonists and what sort of villains you want to see in the sequel trilogy. And I thought your point was really good, is that the question really isn't do the films need the Empire, it's do the films need Palpatine. And I really like that, because to me the films are more about Palpatine than even the Skywalkers. Because he's the guy always in the background that you're trying to get rid of. And he's just so good. And by good, I mean evil. But you know what I mean? It's like, it's hard to imagine a villain to surpass that. So that's what I've always wondered, is who's going to be a villain?
I don't want them to redo Dark Empire. I really don't. I would rather not see that happen, but I wouldn't blame them if they did. Like, even Lucas himself has said that if he had ever done a sequel trilogy, it would basically have been that. And I don't know that they can get around it. Like, I think there's a lot of people who can't see it without Palpatine. They think that he's the... Whether or not... However, that there's a lot of interesting fan divergence in terms of whether the Empire is the bad guy or whether Palpatine's the bad guy and the Empire is just sort of along for the ride, and whether or not you can do the Empire as a villain without him, which is a big part of that conversation, is whether can you do the Empire in a world where Palpatine isn't still around, and I'm not sure that they can, or at least that they would. But at the same time, having their Imperial remnant, I think that complicates things a lot. Like, I can't imagine them not having the Empire as the bad guys, but having them just sort of be around. It seems like it would require a lot of explanation. But one theory that I heard early on that I really like, though I don't know whether they would go for it, was that was a reborn Darth Plagueis, especially if mm-hmm. they did something at least approximating the EU version of him, where he was maybe he didn't actually die to begin with, or he had been frozen in carbonite. Like, there was a rumor a long time ago of a villain from Episode 3 being frozen in carbonite and then brought back in a sequel trilogy. Like, they could yet do that with him if they wanted to, and that would be a nice way of tying it back into Palpatine's legacy, but without actually having to bring him back to life himself, because that would then negate, theoretically, that would negate the whole prophecy. Which, speaking of which, I hate prophecies. As much as, like, as much as I can appreciate the view that Episode 6 is the end of the story, like, it doesn't need to be the greatest, most important thing that has happened in the whole galaxy. It doesn't need to be, Anakin doesn't need to be the chosen one. He killed Palpatine. It was a good thing to have done. That's enough for me. So if they did bring Palpatine back, I don't personally think that takes anything away from Return of the Jedi. I just think it's as uncreative an idea as the Death Star 2 was in the first place. But whether or not they're going to do it, I couldn't imagine. But if it's not him, I think they should just go full tilt in the other direction and lead forward in something that can be another threat on the level of Palpatine that could maybe even do two or three trilogies if they really wanted to do, like something like the Vong. Like, if they did want to do that and really went for it, that could be two trilogies in and of itself.
Right.
Like, I think if they're gonna leave the Empire behind, they have to totally leave it behind. They have to launch totally forward. And I think if the Vong wouldn't do that, I don't know what would.
I can't add much to that. So are there any other articles you've got over at 1138 right now that you want to highlight?
Well, like I said, just today, Jay Shah, who is also far better known as Grand Admiral Jello, another good friend, he posted the first part. This is the first part of his Politics in the EU series, and it is itself more than twice as long as the average op-ed thus far, so there's a lot to chew on there. And I have an article in my back pocket right now by another poster. For the record, pretty much everybody that's writing there so far is from TFN, just because those are the people I know. Those are the people I've been around for a long time, so I trust them, and I know their opinions. I know they're not going to crap out on me. But another writer, another girl named who goes by Becca Toria, her name is Becca Hughes, I believe. She's going to be posting an article about droids and the issue of sentience in Star Wars, and the idea of, are they slaves or are they robots, and can they be both? And what does it say about the saga that they lay such a heavy hand on the more machine than man thing, the idea that the films are kind of poised to be philosophically against machinery, and machinery is antithetical to the Force. But at the same time, we have R2 and 3PO, and we're supposed to love them, and we're supposed to treat them like they're any other character. And what's the dichotomy there, and what could Star Wars be doing with that in terms of making droid sentience an issue, which is something that I really feel like even the EU hasn't done a very good job with. And that's another, honestly, I don't think they would ever do it, but a sequel trilogy I would like to see would be Droid Revolution. I think that's one of the big untold stories in the Star Wars universe that they've never really done. They've kind of alluded to bits of it, but they've never really gone full hog with it, because that would require them to actually think about it rationally. And maybe if it were to take place in the leading edge era, the legacy era, they would have to actually maybe come out at the end of the story with a different situation where maybe droids weren't property anymore. And I don't think they're willing to mess with the galaxy that much. And so it's kind of been something they've ignored.
Right.
I forgot the question.
Dead air. We love that. last chance is here. Any other stuff you want to pimp out? Where can we find you? Social media touch points, things like that.
Well, obviously I'm at TFN, specifically on the literature section, which I'm not even going to try to say the URL because it's long, but if you go to boards.theforest.net, you can find it pretty easily. I'm there all the time. 1138 specifically is 11-38, all spelled out, .com. And we are on Twitter at 1138, all spelled out, except 8 is A-T-E. We're that, and that is also our URL on Facebook too, Facebook/1138. And my personal email is upwardprogression, all one word, @gmail.com. At some point, I want to have so-and-so at 1138.com emails, but I just haven't gotten around to that yet. But all my contact information is on the website, as well as emails for all the staff writers. And that's the gamut of it that I can think of. My personal Twitter account is also @knowtheotherleft, all one word, if anybody cares.
Awesome. Well, both Nancy and I really, really enjoy what you've got on 1138 already, and we're definitely keen to keep an eye out on what y'all are doing over there.
I greatly appreciate you guys' help. I very much, like I said, I really didn't want to do anything that was perceived as in direct competition with what anybody else does, but you guys are the closest, I think, in spirit to what I wanted to do, and I really appreciate that you've been there for me from the beginning. You've been retweeting me and giving me advice and things like that, and I hope that we can continue to have a relationship, and maybe I can send one of my staff guys onto the radio station, the radio show in the future.
Absolutely. Yes. We would love to have anyone off your staff.
We are always looking for guests, because hearing guest talk is a lot more interesting than us.
Because we've done 63 episodes of this. Our listeners are sick of us.
How many years have you been doing this? I haven't.
A year and a half now?
Yeah.
Year and a half. So that's pretty much every week.
Yeah. We've missed a week here and there. I think we're gonna miss a week probably at the end of the month. But it's nearly weekly.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
But yeah, it's a people are so they're either the sky is falling or yay, Lucasfilm does everything perfect, and like there were some episodes of Clone Wars that I really liked, and then there were some episodes that I really did not like. But it seemed like it's really hard to find someone to talk to that will have a similar opinion. So it's nice to see people who are really passionate about Star Wars but not afraid to actually examine it and point out when things are wrong or need fixing.
Yeah, exactly. Because you obviously have to praise the things that work well, but if something isn't working, attention needs to be called to it. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Mike.
Absolutely. It was fun. It's been a long time that it's like this.
And yeah, we'll definitely get you and your other staff members on again at some point. All right. So
them, I'll let them know.
Yeah, great. Let's just ambush them. It'll be fun. All right. This episode of Tashi Station Radio has been brought to you in part by Her Universe and Audible.com. Head over to the blog, check out the links there, and help us keep the lights on. On Twitter, we're available with the handles at Tashi_station. That's the official show account. You can find Nancy with at Nancy Pants. That's Nancy with an I. You can find me with at Lane Winry, LaneWinree. On Facebook, we're the Tashi Station Network. We are available on the iTunes Store. If you like what you hear, do leave a review. It does help us grow the show. You can find our news and columns at Tashi-station.net. That's the official blog of the show. Thank you for listening to another episode, and we will catch you next week with Nancy. Is it Amy Ratcliffe?
Yep, Amy's going to talk about Comic-Con.
Awesome. Amy Ratcliffe with San Diego Comic-Con recap. Catch you next week. So long.
Bye.
This podcast has been brought to you by Majestic Giraffe Productions and is the official podcast of TashiStation.net. All Star Wars names, music, and logos are property of their respective trademark and copyright holders. Tashi Station Radio is not endorsed by Lucasfilm or any division of the company. Now go pick up some power converters.